Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to the Parker J. Cole Show. I'm your host, the Queen, Parker J. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, we're going to be talking to my returning guest co-host and contributor today, Myra Khan Adams. She is the executive director of National Shroud of Turin Exhibit. Cannot wait to tell you more about this in just a few moments. As always, we want to thank you for your support. We have been showcasing Christian authors and thinkers for the last 11 years. As God gives us grace, we'll continue to do so. If you want to help out, go to patreon.com/writestuff. To stay up to date, simply subscribe to our YouTube channel at PJC Media. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring Myra on board. Myra, how you doing?
Hi, Parker. It's so nice to meet with you again in a virtual 21st century way. And I really appreciate you having me on a second time. We're going to have fun today and teach your listeners quite a bit about what we call the world's greatest mystery.
I'm looking forward to being educated as well, and I'm so glad you came back again. We had such a good time when we talked about your book, Bible Study for Those Who Don't Read the Bible, and it's available online, dear listener, and you can also go through our archives and listen to that interview. It was such a great interview. I had such a good time talking to you. And now we have another mystery here, and this mystery is the Shroud Turin. Now, being just a little Baptist girl, I've heard about this, but in hushed conversations over the years, something that those crazy Catholics believe in. And I remember thinking, what's the Shroud of Turin? I kind of have some idea what it is. It's some kind of cloth. Jesus' face is on it. It's a ghost. I mean, you hear so many things about the Shroud of Turin. So I am looking forward to being educated as to what this is, why it is so significant, and what are some movements going on behind the submission of the Shroud of Turin. So I can't wait to dig into it. But Myra, before I do that, go ahead and just give us a brief introduction of yourself.
Okay. My name is Myra Khan Adams, and I am a religious writer. I also write about politics from The Hill. But every week I have a Bible study that posts on townhall.com. And I have two books that are compilations of those Bible studies. The study actually started in February of 2020. And every Sunday, you can see me on townhall.com. And the Bible study is called A Quick Bible Study. But also what I do is I lead an organization called the National Shroud of Turin Exhibit.org. And that is a project of our 501c3 foundation, which is called signfromgod.org, that we've had since the end of 2017. They're all dedicated to educating people about the Shroud of Turin that we call the world's greatest mystery.
I want to ask you some questions because I want to see and get as much detail as you can possibly give us about this, because I'm coming from a place of ignorance and I want to understand. And then I want our listeners who, like me, may have some kind of subconscious idea of the Shroud of Turin, but we don't really know exactly why it is important. And I want to definitely educate myself and our listeners here. So let's go ahead and get the big question out of the way. What is the Shroud of Turin?
Well, the Shroud of Turin physically exists in Turin, Italy. It is in a secure case that's bomb-proof and fireproof and waterproof because of what people like myself, millions around the world, believe that it is, in fact, the burial shroud of Jesus Christ. And because of that, it's amazing. It is a miracle that it still exists, because over the centuries, people have tried to destroy it or burn it or just make it go away. And in Hitler's case, he tried to steal it. It has always been an amazing mystery, but today it has never been more popular. Right now, there have never been more books or documentaries or exhibits. In fact, the History Channel on February 19th did an episode in their series called History's Greatest Mysteries. They did an episode about the Shrouded Turin. And in my organization, National Shrouded Turin Exhibit, I have 14 people, including myself, shroud experts from around the country. Three of them were on that show. So if you do happen to watch that show, you can probably get it on demand. I think you'll find it really interesting. The point is the Shrouded Turin exists, and it has, we believe, since they wrapped Jesus in the shroud, which is biblically based. After they took him down from the cross, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, they wrapped him in the shroud that belonged to Joseph of Arimathea. It was a very highly sought-after cloth because Joseph of Arimathea was a rich man, and he gave the cloth, which he bought for himself, he gave it to Jesus. And he and Nicodemus wrapped Jesus along with 75 pounds of spices in this cloth. And then, of course, they put him in the tomb. That was also Joseph of Arimathea's tomb. So, as we know, as we believe, that was on Friday, and then on Sunday, Jesus rose from the dead. Now, when Jesus rose from the dead, he left his burial shroud. They saw the cloth lying there when John and Peter went into the tomb. And what happened when they saw that cloth lying there? They believed. And that's actually, you know, from the scripture.
What I find fascinating is that it would still exist if this shroud is the actual burial cloth that exists that Jesus was buried in, wrapped and buried in. And I think just hearing that, I can hear some listeners saying, there's no way possible we can confirm that. So based off of that, and I'm pretty sure you get these type of questions, what are some of the arguments or some of the thought pieces that you can share with us to say this is completely plausible that this shroud is the shroud that once wrapped our Lord and Savior?
Yes, and that's a very good question, and certainly it's important to give the right answer. I could talk about this for an hour, but let me just run through it very, very briefly. We have a cloth that is literally the mirror of the Gospels. We also have a cloth that has mysteries on it that are unexplainable by modern science. The shroud has never been replicated. The mysteries on the shroud are kind of mind-blowing. Is there really is only one answer to those mysteries, and that is this has to be created supernaturally. That's the only plausible answer to this myriad of mysteries. Okay, so let's start with the mysteries. They are, the first mystery, most important mystery, is how did that image get there? Now, keep in mind, this image is a full body, head-to-head image, back-to-front, head-to-head image of a crucified man. The shroud itself is 14 feet by 3 inches long. It is 3 feet wide. So it is very long, over 14 feet long. So what that shows you is the man of the shroud, then I'll say, was about 5'10". And he was in his mid-30s. Scientists have looked at the shroud and said, okay, this was a man in his mid-30s. He was in very good shape. And the wounds that are clearly shown on this image are wounds that are completely compatible with the Gospels and with the torture that he endured based on Roman implements of torture that were used at the time when he was tortured and flogged and crucified. So there is nothing on the shroud that is inconsistent with anything that is historical. But let's go back to that first mystery again. How did that image get there? Science, modern science, has never been able to answer that question. And the only major comprehensive study that was done, that was hands-on for 120 hours, was called the Shroud of Turin Research Project, called STIRP. It was 30 American scientists that got permission to go over to Turin and look and analyze the shroud. And at the time, 1978, they studied the shroud with state-of-the-art materials. You can go to shroud.com, and you can learn all about STIRP, because the person that started shroud.com in the late 90s was the photographer on STIRP. His name is Barry Schwartz, and he's a very famous, one of the most famous shroud experts, and he was on the History Channel show that I told you about. He's also one of the members of my team. But anyway, STIRP, in their conclusion, they had, obviously it's a very long conclusion, but something that really resonates with people is they said in this study, the shroud was not the product of an artist. Whoa, okay. think about that for a minute. If it was not the product of an artist, then what was it? I'm going to just leave it there for a moment.
The Shroud of Turin, from what I can understand you're saying, has an image on its surface. And currently, no technology that we have can replicate that image, thus leading to the supernatural means that this image has been left on this shroud.
Yes.
Also consistent with biblical writings and extra-biblical writings about the Roman torture crucifixion. And you mentioned that we can tell from the trial that the person, well, to say the man, who had this wrapped around him was 5'10", in good shape, and he bore the marks of Roman crucifixion.
Correct.
Yes, not just Roman crucifixion, but the tortures that led up to Roman crucifixion.
Yeah, the scourging.
The crown of thorns, which we know from the Shroud of Turin, was really not a crown. It was a cap of thorns. Mm-hmm. And we also know he has bruises on his body from where he carried the cross. Now, keep in mind, it's a misnomer that Christ actually dragged a full cross.
It's always been the beam.
Grabbed the cross beam. But yeah, there are bruises on his shoulders that are consistent where he would have had been, he would have been bruised based on carrying this cross beam. We also know that he has bruises on his knees, and that's also consistent with falling like he did. We also know that dust that they found on the shroud is consistent with dust that is found in Jerusalem. They also know that pollen that was found in Jerusalem during that time is also on the shroud. There are volumes of science, a preponderance of evidence that can back up why the Shroud of Turin is in fact the authentic burial cloth of Jesus. The overarching image is haunting. I mean, you look at this image and you just, you know, can't even believe that what you're looking at could be true. But then something happened that's even more mind-blowing. In 1898, the shroud was photographed for the first time. So when people these days, when they see a picture of the shroud, they see one of two images. They see it either very faint, kind of rust-colored, yellow, very faint image. That is, in fact, what the shroud looks like with your naked eye. But what happened in 1898, it was photographed for the first time because that was new technology at the time in 1898, and the authorities wanted it photographed. So they photographed it, and what happened? In the dark room, it was developed. Of course, that's now. Many of your listeners might even know what a dark room is. And what developed was an image that is actually that looks like a positive image. And that is the image that people see most of the time and think that is the shroud. But that positive image clarifies all the torture and every scourge mark and all the piercings and his face. You you look at this image of the positive image, the positive development of the shroud, and you see a man that is obviously dead, and this was in fact that the shroud represents what he looked like the nanosecond before he was resurrected. So he has a very peaceful look on his face. But the holy face, which you can't really see that well is when you see the shroud with your naked eye. But when you look at this positive image of the shroud, you see this face that now has been called the holy face. And you mentioned in the introduction, you mentioned his face. Maybe that's probably what you've seen. You've seen that black and white image of that face. That face is the holy face. That face is because of the shroud being photographed in 1898, along with all his full body. You can see all the marks from all the scourge marks, over 100 scourge marks. You can see the piercings, everything that he endured, you could see clear as day on that positive image, which actually technically is called a photo negative image, because what we learned since is the shroud itself is a negative. And that was photographed. What developed was the positive. Okay, that is one of the mysteries that cannot be explained at all.
Bear with me for a moment, Myra, and it could be because I'm confused.
Mm-hmm.
When you say negative and positive,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little murky there because I'm not into such photography. So if you can explain it to me just so I will understand it, because, dear listener, this is new information for me, so I'm in the seat of being educated. So bear with me. If you get it faster than I'm getting it, God bless you.
Okay, easy. I'm not a scientist either. I'm not a photographer either, but I just explain it the simplest way. If you are old enough to have a camera with film that you had to get developed, are you old enough to, it's a personal question, but are you old enough to have a camera with film that had to be developed?
I have played with one, yes.
Okay.
Just say that.
Well, what happened is when you took a picture, pre-digital, when you took a picture, you brought it into, Walgreens or something to have it developed. What you got back were the pictures that you took, but you also got little strips of what were called negatives.
Yeah.
And those negatives that you got, then if you wanted to make another copy, you could take those negatives to, Walgreens, and then they would print from those negatives. The Shroud of Turin itself is like one of those negatives. That is the shroud that lives in Turin, Italy. That's been there since 1578. What happened in 1898, when it was photographed for the first time, are the actual pictures that you get developed when you had a camera that you needed developing. So that's really the easiest way to explain it. Now, the positive image that I'll call the pictures that you would have picked up at Walgreens, that positive image of the shroud is extremely clear, that show the sufferings of Jesus that are in fact compatible with the Gospels. And that's why the shroud is often called, in fact, one of the popes called it a mirror of the Gospels, because the shroud itself follows the events that happened on Friday through Resurrection Sunday. And what do I mean by that? Well, when Jesus was convicted, they tortured him. Okay, they scourged him, over 100 scourge marks. Those scourge marks are shown on the Shroud of Turin, and you can see them clear as day on the positive image. We know also that there were over 100 of them. We also know that the scourge marks have a design on them that, in fact, is compatible with the kind of whips that the Romans used, which are called flagrum, these little bones at the end, and they kind of had little, little T-bones at the end. But the point is, they match exactly with the Roman flagrum. We also know that he was crowned with a crown of thorns. That, actually, I say is a cap of thorns. You see on the Shroud of Turin blood on the top of his head. You see it on his forehead. You see it on the back of his head. And the blood marks that were left are compatible with a crown of thorns. Okay, we also know that he carried the cross. As I said, the bruises on his shoulders. We also know that they punched him and spit on him. He has a broken nose. He has some contusions on his face. So far, everything that happened to him before he was crucified is evident on the shroud. Okay, so then he gets crucified. What we see are the piercings. Now, the piercings are interesting because they appear to be not in his palm, like you see when you see a crucifix of Jesus hanging from, you know, in a church. They are, in fact, a little bit above the palm. They are really in his wrist. And
right.
That is, in fact, where the Romans would put the nails, because the palm itself would not have held the weight. So the Romans are really expert. The Romans are really expert at this kind of stuff. So they knew where to put the nails. So they put the nails actually in the wrist. Now, something else that is absolutely fascinating is that if you look at the shroud, you look at the fingers of the man on the shroud, it appears that he only has four fingers. And why is that? People have said, oh, the shroud has to be fake because the man on the shroud only has four fingers. Well, that in fact means the shroud is real, because what happened is when the Romans pierce that wrist, what they do is they literally rip a tendon, and that tendon makes your thumb snap. So it appears that he only has four fingers, but in fact his thumbs are under the four fingers. So it's not that he lost thumbs, it's just that they're hiding underneath the four fingers because of the way those nails were put in there. It snaps the tendon. So that is a fascinating little piece of information that say, wow, okay, that's interesting. The forger, supposedly, that produced the shroud, the artist, that obviously we know it wasn't an artist, but some people think it was an artist. How would that artist have known that? There's no way they would have known that little piece of information. But that itself just speaks volumes about the detail that is on the shroud of Turin. So he gets crucified. Obviously, the piercings are where they're supposed to be. And then the shroud of Turin shows that there's a spear mark. There's a spear that's in his side. And that spear also matches exactly with what a Roman spear would have looked like. We also know that he doesn't have any legs. His legs were not broken. We also know that Jesus, in the Gospels, his legs were not broken. So just all that itself, just right there, the shroud is literally a mirror of the Gospel.
Okay, so based off of what you told me, we're looking at this shroud as having the DNA remnants and photographic evidence of Christ's crucifixion.
That is correct. We also know the blood. There's blood on the shroud, and it's AB. It's type AB positive. Okay, we know
which
that.
Is rare. Is
very rare.
AB is positive rare. Is rare.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I can't help but have some sort of, I don't want to say resistance. That's not the word I want to use. I have questions. That's what it is. I have questions.
Questions are always a good thing.
Well, yeah. It's just I'm trying to get my thoughts together. Like I said, I'm learning, dear listener. Dear listener, if you have some questions too, by the time you hear this episode and you want to put in the comments below and we can answer them, we'd be more than happy to answer them for you at a future recording. Now, my thought is this, Myra. The implications of DNA... Let me think this through, because right now I'm actually thinking of pop culture and I'm remembering an episode of Outer Limits, I think, where they had the Shroud of Turin and it took the blood from DNA and quote unquote clone Christ, right?
But let me tell you one thing. I need to tell you one thing. The blood does not have enough DNA in it because of the fact it's been, you know, in fact it would be thousands of years old. So there is blood. But there's not enough, the blood is not, you know, strong enough, to use a non-technical term, to actually have DNA. Okay, so that's important. So the Shroud of Turin really does not have DNA that can, in fact, be tested and examined. There is blood, okay, and they know that blood is of someone who suffered, but there is not, it disintegrated enough that there's not DNA that they can get from that blood. So I have to correct you when you said DNA.
Oh, please do. Like I said, I'm in the seat of learning here. So let's unpack this a little bit. And one of the questions I have too is, how did the shroud get preserved? I don't think you talked about it. I think you were talking about how Joseph of Arimathea, how he had it. How did it get preserved?
Well, part of the problem is it really wasn't preserved very well.
Okay.
It was not preserved very well, unfortunately. It traveled quite... I think it's interesting about the history of the shroud is there is absolutely no doubt, there is strong historic evidence that in the mid-1300s onward, we know exactly where the shroud was. Okay? It's before the mid-1300s that there is evidence that's more circumstantial. Okay, but there is quite a bit of circumstantial evidence. Some of it is actually even in art. There is it's called the Hungarian Prey Codex, and it shows an image of what looks just like the Shroud of Turin. You find coins that have the face of the Shroud of Turin that appear around 600 AD. And why is that important? Because they believe that for 400 years, the shroud was in a wall in Odessa, and it was then they were rebuilding the city, and they found the Shroud of Turin. There is actually, I mean, this is sort of circumstantial, but the legend is that the shroud was taken initially by St. Jude to a king, and the king was then cured, and then some unfriendlies wanted to get their hands on it, and the city people hid it in a wall. It then appeared again in the 1600s. Okay, then, you know, where it traveled next, some people think it traveled to Constantinople, where it was for a couple hundred years, and then it made its way to France. Okay, and they think the Knights of Templar had something to do with it. It's actually, there is a timeline that can be backed up, not necessarily, you know, with historic evidence, but circumstantial, and some of it, in fact, is historic, but not strong enough to say it was definitely there at this time, as opposed to from the mid-1300s on, we know exactly where it was. But the fact that there is a lot of circumstantial evidence that says, okay, this, in fact, was where we think it was. There's also some really interesting things on the shroud. When you look at it, it goes back to your question of how did this survive? It shouldn't have survived. I mean, that's the point. It shouldn't have survived. But when you think about it like this, the greatest miracle of mankind is the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Amen.
Don't you think that the Lord would have left evidence of that miracle? And you think about it like this. Remember the doubting Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
I believe the shroud is the doubting Thomas of our age. Doubting Thomas didn't believe that Jesus was resurrected until he was able to put his fingers in Christ's wounds. And what did Jesus say? You know, blessed those that believe but don't see like you have seen. And the shroud is for those that need to see. And they see evidence of a man who was horribly tortured and crucified, but we also know that there's great hope because we know that he was resurrected. And this shroud is a result of the latest theory that I believe is, in fact, particle radiation that came up from within the body of Jesus in a burst of light. And it's almost like, let there be light when the world was created, and then the transfiguration where Jesus was transformed with light. So it makes sense that there was light, that light energy that was involved in making this image on the shroud. The light energy was enough to make this miraculous image, but did not destroy the linen cloth. I mean, how is that possible? Again, it's this is why the Shroud of Turin is the world's greatest mystery.
I have just been fascinated by this conversation, Myra, and some of the things that you are saying are really getting the gray matter just bubbling up. right now as I listen to you, particularly the idea of, you said particle radiation and like this extreme sense of light would have imprinted the image of its source on this linen and not be destroyed. And I thought about the transfiguration, just like you said, I thought about let there be light and all these other kind of things come to mind. So I'm just really fascinated by this topic. And so dear listener, if you do have questions, make sure you leave them below the show description beneath, and we will get to those questions at a later date. Now, before we go back to the Shroud of Turin, I want to talk about your organization because you're doing something really interesting with it. I heard you had a press conference in Washington just this past month in February on the 8th. What was that all about?
Well, we have an organization called National Shroud of Turin Exhibit.org. Our goal is to produce a permanent Shroud of Turin exhibit in Washington, D.C. Many of us were, and my group were involved with the Museum of the Bible when they had their Shroud exhibit in 2022. They decided they didn't want to make it permanent. It's hard to take a temporary exhibit and make it permanent, and they decided they couldn't do that. So our group was formed. You know, some of us were involved in the fact that the museum actually had that exhibit. It was their most popular exhibit ever. So we started National Shroud of Turin Exhibit.org. We're trying to raise money to build this exhibit. One of the things that we're doing is we help promote what's called the $1 Million Challenge to replicate the Shroud of Turin. Now, this started because there is a gentleman in England. His name is David Rolfe. He produced in 1978 a movie called Silent Witness. And this movie really was the first movie about the Shroud, a documentary about it. He won a British Academy Award for it. And then in 2022, he produced another movie called WhoCanHeBe.com. Actually, it's called Who Can He Be? The website is WhoCanHeBe.com. In that movie, David levied a challenge to the British Museum. And he has a million dollar donor. And they challenged the British Museum. And why the British Museum? Because the British Museum are the ones that did the 1988 carbon dating that said that the Shroud dated only to the Middle Ages. And scientists know that it's absolutely impossible for that to be. But there was a lot of agendas going on. Anyway, it's been since totally disproven what they did. The research that was redone in 2019 proved that their initial conclusion was not right. But anyway, so what David did is he challenged them to a $1 million challenge if the British Museum could replicate the Shroud of Turin. Now, keep in mind, the Shroud of Turin has never been replicated. Scientists have never been able to replicate it. But David had this donor, and the donor said, fine, let's challenge the British Museum. What happened is the British Museum did nothing. They did nothing, zero. They didn't even deal with it. Okay, so I was over in London last September, and I met with David Rolfe, and I asked him, I said, what happened to the $1 million challenge? And he told me that the British Museum totally, blew it off. And I said, well, why don't we bring it to America? He said, my group, we're trying to build a National Shroud of Turin exhibit, and I'd like to extend the $1 million challenge to replicate the Shroud of Turin. Let's bring it to America. So his donor said, fine. So on February 8th, we had a press conference, and actually we got quite a bit of press as a result of it. And the challengers have to replicate the Shroud of Turin using the technology that was available in the Middle Ages. Now, on WhoCanHeBe.com, you will see the criteria, you will see the application. So far, we have not received any challenges. And again, the application is due in May, so there is still time. But when you read the criteria that is required, and this isn't criteria that we just made up so our donor could keep his $1 million. This criteria is based on science, scientific details and measurements that are on the Shroud of Turin that are undisputed. So you go to that list of criteria, you look at them, and you say, okay, but this can't have any ink or dye or paint. You have to have really what the Shroud of Turin has on it. And the Shroud of Turin does not have any ink or dye or paint. There is no materials that we know of that could have produced that image. Because that image does not seep into the cloth. The image sits on top of the cloth.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is if you follow the timeline of the events of Good Friday and the resurrection, on Good Friday, they wrapped him in the tomb. He was all beat up. He was bloodied. He was dead. Blood got on the cloth, and that blood seeped through the cloth like blood tends to seep through cloths. So on Resurrection Sunday, the blood is there. But when the image occurred, there is no image where there's blood. Scientists say, and this is a great little way to remember it, blood first, image second. But that follows the timeline of the events that happened. So that it's also very, very interesting. There's no image where there is blood. But anyway, we put out this challenge, and we're waiting for challengers. We don't know. Maybe we'll get the same reaction that the British Museum got. And when May comes around and we don't have any challengers, then we're going to make a big deal out of that. Because the fact that it just goes to show that the shroud cannot be replicated. No one has been able to replicate it. The greatest scientists have not been able to replicate it. It's impossible. And that it just points to what the shroud really is, which is in fact a representation of a nanosecond before Christ was resurrected.
So this is absolutely fascinating to me. And if it could be replicated, it would have been by now, I would think. And I'm just going just based off everything we just discussed during this conversation. So if it can be replicated, then whoever replicates it gets $1 million, but they have to use, you said, Middle Ages technology.
Now, that Middle Ages technology is based on the conclusion of the British Museum's 1988 carbon dating, when they said the shroud was produced by an artist between the years of 1260 and 1390. So that's where the Middle Ages comes from. But we also know that photography wasn't invented for 500 more years. So how is it possible when the shroud was photographed in 1898 and then developed in a darkroom and produced a positive image, really, we call it, it's a photo negative image, but in fact is a positive image. Photography wasn't around for 500 years. So how could this Middle Ages forger have hidden a photographic positive image in the shroud? It's impossible. It's impossible. So that's just one of the mysteries that said that those dates between 1260 and 1390 are just, so off the wall.
Well, I do have a couple of questions from listeners here. And two of them come from one gentleman, Jeremy from Dothan, Alabama. He's been a longtime supporter of the show. And he says, how do you respond to the presumed Caucasian features of the face?
That's a very good question, but unfortunately, it's a misguided question.
Okay.
Because the features are not Caucasian at all. They are, in fact, they resemble a man who was from the Middle East. He does not have Caucasian features. So I don't know where that person, your viewer, heard that from, but they are not Caucasian. You can look at the holy face, and that is not a Caucasian-looking face by any means. Of course, when you look at the holy face, keep in mind, this is of a man that was dead, but you can look at the computer modeling of that image, and that image has been computer modeled. And the reason it has been, it's based on the information that's on the Shroud of Turin, because one of the other mysteries, one of the many mysteries of the Shroud, is the Shroud itself has 3D distance information. And that was discovered in the 1970s. So it's a 2D surface, but it has 3D information. And that 3D information is used to model the face of Jesus. And that 3D information clearly shows that that face is not Caucasian. It is definitely Middle Eastern. Because he was from the Middle East. He's not going to look like he was from Norway, you know?
Not Thor, right? Okay. Also, his other question is, the shroud covers Jesus' entire body, but we're told in Scripture that he had a face wrap. What would that have looked like given the features on the shroud?
That's an awesome, a very, very good question. Thank you for asking that question. What happened was when they took Jesus off the cross, what was put on his face was called either the napkin or a handkerchief. It's about, you know, maybe, 2 feet by 2 feet. It's like a square cloth that, like, if someone dies suddenly in an accident, someone will just, like, throw a cloth over their face, okay? So they basically threw something, basically a rag, on his face. That is today, believe it or not, that actually exists too. It's called the Sudarium of Oviedo, and it resides in Oviedo, Spain. Now, that face cloth was also found in the tomb. If you go to the Gospel, I believe it's the Gospel of John, it says that there was a napkin or a handkerchief lying there also. That is the face cloth. The face cloth is not the Shroud of Turin. The face cloth does not have an image like the shroud has. What it has is just stains. It has blood stains. It has, you know, gunk that would have been on Jesus' face. Now, there's been studies that have been done of the, quote-unquote, you know, gunk blood that's on the Sudarium of Oviedo. It's called Sudarium of Oviedo. Oviedo, Spain is where it exists. It's the two match up perfectly. There are studies that show the two wrap the same person. And again, is, you know, one of the things I've written about this, that it authenticates the shroud. It has the same AB positive blood, and they've literally taken the Sudarium of Oviedo, put it on the shroud, and scientific studies have shown that the two cloths match up. But the Sudarium of Oviedo does not have an image of a face like the shroud has, because it did not cover Jesus' face at the time of the resurrection. It was only there before he was wrapped in the clean linen cloth that belonged to Joseph of Arimathea.
So, okay, I'm confused. Not you. It's me. Okay. So the face cloth.
It's not a face cloth. Well, that's not true. It was a face cloth in the sense that it covered Jesus' face when he was taken down from the cross. But then when he was wrapped in the shroud, that face
cloth removed.
But that face cloth actually is called either the napkin or the handkerchief in some translations. It was also found in the tomb, separate from the shroud. Separate from the burial cloth of Jesus, there was another cloth. And that was the face cloth. They put it in the tomb with Jesus, but it wasn't covering his face when he was resurrected. There's no facial image on the face cloth. That is officially called the Sudarium of Oviedo. You can look it up. It's something that, you know, a lot of shroud researchers like to compare the two. There's been books written about it. It's absolutely fascinating. That the Sudarium of Oviedo still exists also. But the two definitely have a congruence of how they covered the same person, and scientific studies have bared that out.
Do have another question. We have a question from Marion in California. Marion says, do both Catholics and Eastern Orthodox Christians accept the authenticity of it? Shroud.
You know, you can't, that's an interesting question. You cannot generalize. There are Catholics. First of all, the shroud is not just for Catholics. I mean, Jesus isn't just for Catholics. Jesus is for everyone. The shroud is something that is revered by millions of people around the world. I know many Protestants that believe it's the burial cloth of Jesus because they understand the mysteries behind it. There are Catholics that believe it. There are Catholics that don't believe it. There are Orthodox that believe it. There's Orthodox that don't believe it. It just really depends. It cross cuts religion. It has nothing to do with religion. It's like there is this cloth. There are mysteries that cannot be explained. There is a preponderance of science that verifies that these mysteries cannot be explained or has never been reproduced. Now, does that mean it should in fact be believed by all Catholics? No. And that is because, keep in mind, the shroud right now is quote-unquote owned by what they call the Holy See. That is, whoever is the Pope owns the shroud. But it wasn't always owned by the Holy See. It was not always owned by the Pope. It wasn't until the 1983, I think it was, right around the mid 1980s, that it was owned by the King of Italy. And after the last king died, he gave it to the Holy See. But it was not always owned by the Vatican and the Pope. So that's a relatively recent development.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it goes back to what I said earlier in our broadcast about something that Catholics believe. And the fact you just said that this really does cross over faith and religions because regardless to what you believe, how do you explain this mystery? That's literally what this thing, that's what I'm getting from this conversation is how do you explain this mystery and what do you do with that information? It's one of those type of things. And I can appreciate you making that statement. The next question we got is from Eli. Eli says, and I think you'll answer this question quite succinctly, but you said, how would it affect your faith, if at all, if it were authentic? This is from Eli.
I love this question. My faith does not depend on the Shroud of Turin. I had faith before I even knew about the Shroud of Turin. But what it does is for people that don't have faith, it gives them a piece of physical evidence, just like Jesus was the physical evidence that Doubting Thomas needed. The Shroud can be utilized as evidence that Christ was, in fact, a man who was tortured and he was resurrected. It can be used as that for those that need that evidence. As I hear all the time, oh, I don't need the Shroud to believe. It's like, okay, neither do I. But the fact that it exists, it doesn't exist for me. It exists for people that need it. And I know many cases where people have been brought to belief in Jesus based on their being educated about the Shroud of Turin. So it's really pretty fascinating. It's a living object. You know, the Shroud of Turin is alive in the sense that the more technology develops, the more things we learn about the Shroud, it is a living artifact because technology is a friend of the Shroud. And unfortunately, there has not been any 21st century authorized scientific studies. The Catholic Church, which controls the Shroud, has not allowed any. So we are hoping that, in fact, there will be at some point. It's up to the Pope. If we get a new Pope, maybe there will be some testing, new testing. In the meantime, there's some, you know, private testing that goes on based on, you know, people might have a shred or a hair or something based on some studies that they've done in the past or had access to the Shroud. But for the most part, there's no hands-on studying of the Shroud like there was in the 1978 STIRP. But we are hopeful that there will be studies. With scientific technology has progressed so much since 1978 when the STIRP study was done. And the particle radiation theory especially could be, in fact, tested.
Now, that would be absolutely fascinating. And I'm surprised that the Pope wouldn't allow that because God says up to scrutiny all the time. And like you just said, I don't need the Shroud to, I guess you could bolster your faith, but you didn't need it in the first place. You know what I mean? And so I think it'd be fascinating to have that happen. So maybe it could be just the Pope. He has other things on his mind. And I think that that's a worthy endeavor as I'm thinking this through. And I know our listeners listening in, I know you probably have some questions too. So make sure you leave the questions below in the show description, or you can just email me directly and I'll give those questions to Myra for a future interview about this. This brings me to my next question, and it's about Jesus. And it's about an organization and a website you have saying, who can't he be? And I think this really goes to our topic here, because if we can't recreate it with the technology that we have now, and we can't recreate it with the technology that was then based off of that presupposition, then who can he be? So tell us a little about this website and how it relates to the exhibit that you're working on right now.
Yes. Well, it actually doesn't relate to the exhibit. What it relates to is the $1 million challenge that we're putting forth. The website, Who Can He Be, is the name of David Rolfe's, R-O-L-F-E, his movie that he produced in 2022. It's a fascinating movie. You can stream it online. And in that movie is what he had. He offered the $1 million challenge to the British Museum. And the British Museum did just incredible damage to the shroud, in the sense that they said it was a Middle Ages forgery, and that it has stuck with the shroud. And people that don't believe shroud is real always go back to, the 1988 Carbon Dating. It says it's a Middle Ages forgery. But in fact, their scientific research was so flawed and has been disproven. One of the people that I happen to know, Tristan Casabianca, he literally sued the British Museum because they would not release the raw data for 29 years from that carbon dating. It was so flawed. They violated every protocol they said they were going to do. It was so flawed. But then Tristan was able to get that data, and with his group of scientific researchers, they reran the same data, and they determined that there is no way that the British Museum could have come to the conclusion that the shroud was produced between the years 1260 and 1390. And so day by day, the effects of that bogus study have been fading, and people are more enamored with the mysteries. And again, the question, who can he be? And that's why the shroud today is more popular than ever, especially now coming up on Easter. You're going to hear more and more about the shroud. Because in fact, every year around Easter, you know, there's all these things about the shroud that are on the news. You know, is it real? Is it real? Is it fake? And basically, the fake people all go back to the 1988 carbon dating. But the evidence of the fact that this man suffered for us, and we cannot reproduce what we see on this cloth, and it totally lines up with what the Bible says. And the mystery between the sign, between the photographic mystery, and they can't figure out how the image got there, and how did 3D distance information get there? You know, how does the image sit on top of the cloth but doesn't seep through the cloth? And no materials that we know of produced this image. There's no paint or dye. It was not produced with human hands. Because one of the other mysteries that's so interesting is the image itself does not vary in depth. It basically, it's like it sits on the hair of your arms, but it does not vary in depth. Whereas a human hand, if you paint something, even if you try to make it completely even, it's not going to be completely even, because human hands cannot make something totally, perfectly even. And so the image of the shroud does not vary in depth whatsoever. There's also no brush strokes of any kind on the shroud. There's no outlines. It's absolutely amazing. The more you learn about the shroud, the more you ask the question that Jesus asked Peter, that we always associate with the shroud, who do you say I am? And what David Rolfe did at his website, Who Can He Be, in the movie that he did, really is the same kind of question. Who do you say I am? You know, comes from the Bible. And that's a question that's often associated with the shroud. It's one of the things we use. The other thing that's really interesting is, we say this all the time, it's kind of funny, the shroud was the first selfie. And I was going to laugh when you say that. But it's actually true. It is really true. And you think about it. And again, who do you say I am? Who can he be? You know, these are questions only you can answer. But the more you educate yourself about the mysteries and about what science has been able to do and cannot do, and able to prove and not able to prove about the shroud, the more you realize that there's really only one answer that fits all the mysteries, and that is this is a supernatural event that created this image. And I believe it was done with light, because light is what we think of when we think of Jesus. God is light. Jesus is light. He's love. And so certainly the shroud had to be created with a burst of light, but that is so consistent with what we know, the way the Lord created the earth, and we know Jesus transformed in the transfiguration.
Light shadows. Well, I have to be honest with you, Myra. I have just been intrigued beyond my wildest dreams, and it makes me definitely want to dig more into this mystery that you have been so timely to present to us today on the show. And I like the fact that you said it's the doubting Thomas. It's for the people who need to see evidence, because evidence is what it is. It doesn't have a bent. It doesn't have an ideological bent. It is what it is. We have this artifact that has an image of a man that fits all the various criteria of Jesus's crucifixion. And the person who made this image is not there. So where is he? Because usually when you bury things, it will just stay with the person buried. So why do we even have it? So lots of little mysteries, just in my mind right now, lots of little things are coming to mind as I simmer on this topic. And I'm so very glad you took time to be here with me today to talk about this. I am just so invigorated by the conversation. And to you, dear listener, those of you who are listening, make sure if you have questions, comments even if you disagree, go right ahead, put it down in the comment section below. We'd love to be able to have an opportunity to respond to you and to respond to any questions or comments you may have. Now, Myra, I'm also going to have your information below, because you do write for Town Hall, and you do
have a Bible study on Sunday.
Bible study there on Sundays. And then I'm also going to link the original podcast that we did about her Bible study also in the show links below. So just been having a great time. I thank you so much for being with me on the show. Cannot wait to have you back, and have you back soon.
Thank you so much for having me. And the purpose of my being here today with you is really to get people interested in doing their own research. That's why we talk about the shroud. That's our point, to educate people about the shroud.
Myra, thank you again for being with us. And dear listener, thank you for joining me for this edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. If you have been invigorated, check out those links below. We'd love to have your feedback. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day. God bless.